Good day, and welcome to the Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference call. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Ms. Kristen Martson. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Lisa. Welcome, and thank you for calling into Cigna's Autism Awareness Series. My name is Kristen Martson, and I'm the lead clinician for the autism team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of this conference, you will be transferred into a brief 5-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After this survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's presentation. A handout for today's seminar is available online at www.cigna.com/autism. Scroll to the current topic section in the middle of your page and click on today's topic labeled Gaining Compliance. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information, if your policy covers topics discussed in today's seminar, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today I have the pleasure of introducing Cindy McCullough. Cindy has been working with children and adults with autism spectrum disorders and other developmental delays in their families for the past 15 years. She earned her master's degree in special education with an emphasis in social skills development from San Jose State University. She has worked as an ABA therapist, habilitation specialist, and as a classroom special education teacher and full inclusion specialist. Cindy, thank you for being here today. You are welcome to start your presentation.
Hi, thank you. Thank you so much, Kristen. Welcome to our Cigna Autism Awareness presentation today. Again, my name is Cindy McCullough. I'm the executive director and owner of Get Social Therapy in Roseville, California. I'm a board-certified behavior analyst specializing in the treatment of children and adults with autism, anxiety, and ADHD. However, my most important job at this time is being a mother and raising 2 boys, ages 8 and 5. Now, you may think that based on my credentials and the fact that I'm giving this presentation today, that my home is a place of calm and order, and that my children are model citizens who are always super eager to please me and do as I say. Well, don't let the initials after my name fool you. The title of today's presentation is Will These Kids Ever Listen to Me? Something my husband and I often ask ourselves at the end of the day as we sit cross-eyed, stupefied, and exhausted on our couch. I cannot lie to you. I don't possess a secret formula that's going to turn your child into a charming Stepford-like robot that only wants to obey your commands. If I could do that, I'd surely be sitting on the beach right now in Fiji rather than presenting online today. But what I can tell you is this. There are some effective behavioral strategies that I've picked up versus my professional career. And then if you apply these strategies diligently, they're going to make your life as a parent just a little bit easier. Easy? No. Easier? Yes. So let's go ahead and get started. First step, fill the tank. Before we ever begin to try to change our child's behavior, it's very important that we work on establishing a really close-knit bond with our child. I like to call this filling the tank. A child with a full tank is going to trust you, their parent or caregiver. They're going to trust your directions and your advice. They're going to be emotionally full and less apt to seek attention through reprimands and through bad behavior. A child who has a close relationship with their parent is going to be more compliant than one who does not. It really is that simple. Now, how do you go about strengthening a relationship with your child? First, spend time together. Now listen carefully, because I mean uncontaminated time. So that's not time spent checking your iPhone, thinking about closing a business deal while you listen to your child go on and on about Minecraft as you say, that's great, honey, and pretend to listen as your child speaks, which I'm totally guilty of doing sometimes as well. But it's really thinking about what your child's saying. It's giving them their full attention, being in close proximity, looking at them when they speak, and being a really active participant in the conversation or play that's at hand. We have such busy lives, and there's such a great deal of distractions in our modern world, but just carving out even 15 minutes a day of time spent working on and developing your relationship with your child can make the world of difference in your child's behavior, resilience, and overall emotional well-being. Make it a point to do something that your child enjoys. Make it about them. get on their level and join in their world. If you have a little one that just loves trains, get down on the ground and lose yourself in a race of Thomas versus Percy. If you have an older child who loves prehistoric animals, get really interested in megalodons and ask your kiddo everything that he or she knows about that animal. There's no better way to your child's heart than taking a true interest in talking about or engaging in a preferred topic or activities. Another great way to strengthen your bond with your child, besides enjoying in their interests and giving them attention, is offering them empathy. Do your best to look at the world from your child's point of view. Every person has the need to feel understood, even our kids. So please do your best to be a mirror to your child. Physically show your child that you understand them. If your kiddo comes home from school and is screaming and crying that someone at school called them a name like Cuckoo Potato Head, which just happened in my house last week, don't dismiss them. You and I both know that the name Cuckoo Potato Head is absolutely ridiculous, but to your child, the hurt that he or she feels is really real. Shut your computer down and listen. Mirror their face with yours. Get physically close. Tell them, wow, you sound really upset that they called you that name. Now, I'm not asking you to be fake or to offer false sympathy, but rather empathy. Get excited when they're excited. When your daughter comes home and makes the cheerleading team, stop what you're doing, put your dish towel down, and celebrate with her. Empathy is merely just letting your child know that you understand and you can see their point of view. As you consistently demonstrate empathy for your child in turn is going to begin to develop the skills themselves. Finally, avoid nitpicks. Nitpicks will make you and your child absolutely miserable in the long run. Let all that inconsequential behavior slide. Pick and choose your battles. What's important to talk about, what's important to correct, and if it's not really deeply important, let it go. I'm going to read you a story to demonstrate my point. The name of the story is called Father Forgets by W. Livingston Learned and was printed by the Reader's Digest like 50 or so years ago. And it goes a little like this. And as you listen, think about all the nitpicks that come out throughout the day and think what might be consistent with your behavior and think about the things that maybe you can let slide. Goes like this. Listen, son, I'm saying this to you as you lie asleep, one little paw crumpled under your cheek and your blonde curls thickly wet on your damp forehead. I've stolen into your room alone just a few minutes ago as I sat reading my paper in the library. A stifling wave of remorse swept over me. Guiltily, I come to your bedside. These are the things I was thinking, son. I had been so cross to you. I scolded you as you were dressing for school because you gave your face merely a dab with a towel. I took you to task for not cleaning your shoes, and I called out angrily when you threw some of your things on the floor. At breakfast, I found fault, too. You spilled things. You gulped down your food, and you put your elbows on the table. You spread butter too thick on your bed, and as you started off to play and I made for my train, you turned and waved a hand and called, "Goodbye, Daddy," and I frowned and said in reply, "Hold your shoulders back." Then it began all over again in the late afternoon. As I came up the road, I spied you down on your knees playing marbles. There were holes in your stockings, and I humiliated you in front of your friends by marching you ahead of me to the house. Stockings are expensive, and if you had to buy them, you would be more careful. Imagine that, son, from a father. Do you remember later when I was reading in the library how you came in timidly with a sort of hurt look in your eyes when I glanced up over my paper impatient at the interruption and you hesitated at the door? "What is it you want?" I snapped. You said nothing, but ran across in one tempestuous plunge and threw your arms around my neck and kissed me, and your small arms tightened with affection that God had set blooming in your heart and which even neglect could not wither. And then you were gone, pattering up the stairs. Well, son, it was shortly afterward that my paper slipped from my hands and a terrible, sickening fear came over me. What was this habit doing to me, this habit of finding fault, of reprimanding? This was my reward to you for being a boy. It was not that I did not love you. It was that I expected too much of you. I was measuring you by the yardstick of my own years. And there is so much that was good and fine and true in your character. The little heart of you is as big as the dawn itself over the Wyatt Hills. This is shown by your spontaneous impulse to rush in and kiss me goodnight. Nothing else matters tonight, son. I've come to your bedside in the darkness, and I have knelt by you ashamed. It is a terrible atonement. I know that you do not understand these things if I told them to you during your waking hours, but tomorrow I will be a real daddy. I will chum with you, then suffer when you suffer, and laugh when you laugh. I will bite my tongue when impatient words come. They will keep saying it as if it were a ritual. He is nothing but a bit of a boy. So like I said, let that inconsequential stuff slide. The father in the story realized that he was a nitpicker, and it was not working for their relationship. Pick and choose your battles. Praise your child. Be happy when your child...
Who's the caller? We're having difficulty hearing you now. Please stand by. If I can ask you to please stand by. We're at this time having a technical difficulty, and we will be rejoining everyone momentarily. So please stand by. Is now rejoined.
I'm not sure where it left off. So the point of that story was really, truly just to avoid the nitpicks. Fill your child's tank. Be sad when they're sad. Be happy when they're happy. And do your best to really strengthen that bond. Now, on to the burning question that my husband and I and every other parent asks themselves. Why aren't these kids listening to me? Well, I have to let you in on a secret. It's actually pretty simple. There are four reasons for noncompliance. Your child either wants to, one, escape a task. In other words, they just want to completely get out of doing it altogether. Two, they want to delay the task, which means putting it off until later. Or three, they have absolutely no clue how to do it, or they're just not quite sure how to meet your specifications. Or finally, four, they just want to make you mad. And that last one's really primarily prevalent in our teen population. Now take a moment to think. Why aren't your kids listening to you? Is it to escape? Is it to delay? Is it because they don't know how to do it? Or are they trying to make you angry? Take a moment and think about it. Now that you've had a moment to reflect on why your child is not listening, let's discuss some easy steps that you can take to get them to listen more frequently. First, be on the same page as your spouse or partner, and then take the time to master the three C's. Assess, is your child capable of doing the task that you're asking them to do? Give clear and concise directions. And be consistent. And again, throughout, work on your relationships and sprinkle some sugar. Give praise often. Be on the same page as your spouse or partner. Agree to the same rules and expectations. I believe it was Lincoln that said, "A house divided against itself can't stand." Well, this holds true not only for the state of our union, but it holds true for the state of our own tiny home. Nothing, and I do mean nothing, confuses a child more than changing expectations and frustrates them more than trying to shoot at moving targets, never knowing what exactly is going to please you and be right. Take the time to talk with your spouse or partner about parenting. Take the time to really sit down and sketch out your household rules and agree to the consequences. You cannot effectively shape a child's behavior if you do not first agree on the behavior it is that you're looking for. What behaviors would you like to see increase, and which behaviors would you like to see go away? Just think about it. You and your spouse are a coach. No coach enters a game without having a game plan. Coaches disseminate their game plans to their teams, and the teams that do not know what the game plan is do not win games. So your first step is to create that game plan. Sit down with your partner and create a to-do list. What exactly is it that you want little Johnny to do? Behavior analysts do not change behaviors by making to-don't lists. So when I create a behavior support plan for a client, I'm always looking to teach specific behaviors. As the client learns these new pro-social behaviors, their problem behaviors tend to dissipate. So please think about what behavior it is that you would like to see first. Let's practice together for a moment. Let's turn these to don't statements into to do's. Okay, so the first one, don't hit your brother. What can you say instead of don't hit your brother? How about if they're fighting in the back seat, instead of saying don't hit your brother, you can simply say, please keep your hands in your lap. Two, don't run in the house. It can very easily be, please walk in the house. Three, don't leave the table a mess. It could very easily be, please put your dishes in the sink and wipe off the table. We cannot expect our children to do what we want if we cannot effectively communicate our expectations. And we also need to know, what are our expectations? What exactly it is that we want to have happen? What is going to make our household happy? So take a few moments just to generate a to-do list of behaviors that you would like to see increase in your own home. Once you and your partner are on the same page for what behaviors you would like to see increase, it's important that you also take the time to agree on consequences. How are you going to reward the good behavior? If you're going to use punishment, how is the undesirable behavior going to be punished? I never, ever recommend flying by the seat of your pants on this. Speaking from experience, and in that moment of frustration, and you're tired and it's the end of the day, and sometimes we can go way overboard in our punishments when we're angry, and the decisions that we make can be completely illogical. Having a plan is going to really help you and your spouse or partner from needing to backtrack on over-lavish extrinsic rewards or bribery. It's also going to help you avoid taking back consequences that were a little over the top. So these practices really confuse children, and they lead to a lot of extra stress in the home. So be on the same page and just have a plan. Debrief often and assess what's working and what isn't. If you make a plan with your partner, if you guys are unable to consistently follow through with it, it's like having no plan at all. So having consistent debrief sessions with each other, hey, what's working? Is Johnny eating more at dinner now, or is he still throwing his plate on the ground and crying and having tantrums? You know, our plan of rewarding him with ice cream after dinner doesn't seem to be working. Let's change it up. Having a plan is going to really, really help build better consistency across parents, and eventually is going to avoid your child playing you against each other. But when mom's here, she says that this happens, or dad's so mean because he never, it's going to help you avoid a lot of extraneous conflict that's not necessary. Next. Before we start to talk about what it means to be clear and concise, let's take a moment to look at that to-do list that I asked you to make, and let's assess your expectations. Ask yourself, is your child capable of doing the things on the list? For example, if your to-do list contains a statement such as, I expect her to keep her room clean, let's take a moment and determine if your child is actually capable of meeting that expectation. Does he or she know how to fold clothes? Does she or he know how to make the bed? Do the executive functioning deficits make it in such a way that they're unable to scan the room and make a plan for cleanup? You and your child will be much happier if the expectations are reasonable and can indeed be met. If your child's not capable of doing something on your to-do list, do not be deterred. It's not a big deal. You can just break down what it is that you want them to do into smaller pieces and teach them one skill at a time. Pretty soon, they will be meeting that expectation. Next, be clear and concise when you give your demands. Before issuing an instruction, get your child's attention. Do this by standing close to your child, saying their name, and waiting for them to orient their body towards you and disengage from whatever activity they are doing. I never, ever, 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 ever recommend issuing directions to a child who is actively engaged in playing a video game or watching a television show or issuing an instruction by screaming it from the bottom of the stairs. These techniques, even though we all do them time to time, I'm guilty as well, are not effective for even typical children, and they're going to be even less effective for children with any sort of auditory processing delays. So again, get close to your child, say their name, and wait until you have their full intention before giving an instruction. Your instruction should have the following components: the who, the what, the when, the where, and the what comes next. For example, I might say to my son, Riley, I would like for you to turn off the TV at 7:30 and then go upstairs to bed. If you show me that you're a big boy and turn off the TV tonight, I can read you a chapter of your favorite book while you're in bed. So that statement tackled exactly what the expectation was, when it needed to be happened, and then what comes next. How are you going to reward the behavior? You're going to want to motivate your child to make sure that you embed that in your statement. Allow your child some processing time, too, when giving directions. I oftentimes have to coach my clients' families to slow down their rate of speech and allow some pause time. Many of our children on the spectrum can have a processing delay time of up to 5 seconds. So allow that information to sink in. Once you've issued your direction, check for your child's understanding. And it's really simple to do this. All you have to do is ask your child to repeat back the instruction to you, just to make sure that they indeed understand what the expectation is. You will have much more success in gaining your child's compliance if you take the vocabulary, processing time, and attention span into consideration. Some children are able to follow multi-step directions, but many of our kids can't. Set your child up for success by using vocabulary they can understand and not overwhelming them with multiple directions at a time. Your child can only follow one direction, just give one direction at a time, and allow them adequate time to process your request. Now, once the instruction's been delivered and we've checked for understanding, we're going to want to stay clear of arguments and escalations. Arguing and tantrum behaviors are super effective for kids. They're very, very effective tools to escape doing a task, and to delay the start of a task, and engaging in an argument is also going to get that child tons of one-on-one attention if that is what the function of their behavior is. Please do not fall into these traps. Do not engage in arguments if you can even possibly avoid it. If your child tries to ensnare you in an argument as to why they must complete a task, you need only answer them one time and one time only. Give them one simple, logical reason as to why you are making the request and avoid using phrases like, I'm your mom and I told you so. So just one simple, logical reason. I need you to show me that you're responsible. I'm having you do this so you can stay healthy. This is going to help you be safe. This is going to improve something for you in some way. So just one simple, logical reason why. State it one time and then end the discussion. You may simply ignore all other queries. Okay, but I have a word of warning. If your child is a chronic why asker, this is going to be very, very difficult at first. They are going to be so angry. And they're going to, but why, mom, why? And you're going to have to ignore their escalations. And if you do this consistently and you only answer them one time, eventually, the behavior is going to stop. You're really just going to have to hunker down and hang in there, and I assure you that that incessant why asking will go away. So now that your instructions are out there, you've told them your expectations, you've checked for their understanding, and they know what the reward for following through with your instruction is, it's really up to you to be consistent. If you promised your child that they could stay up an extra 15 minutes if they took out the trash, then you absolutely need to follow through. If you promised them dessert only if they ate all of the broccoli on their plate, then you can only give them dessert if every last bit of broccoli was eaten. It's going to be tough. And it's going to be trying, especially if these are new behaviors that you yourself are adopting. Your child is going to test you. They might kick, they might scream, they might cry, they might shout, and they might make deals with the devil. You have to be consistent, and you have to follow through. Once your child knows that your follow-through is always going to be there, they're going to be so much more apt to listen to you. Finally, it's going to be very important to avoid behavioral negotiations. You may negotiate the rewards for meeting the expectations, but do not, under any circumstances, negotiate the expected behavior itself. This is going to create a long and weary pattern of bargaining behavior. Trust me, it's going to exhaust you. Your expectations are not negotiable. However, the way that you reward the follow-through can be negotiable, but what you want your child to do is not. So lay it out there, and your word has to be strong, and it will eventually become golden. Lastly, it's going to be really important to continue to work on your relationship and to keep it strong. Do your best to to give at least 8 positive comments for every 1 correction that you give. This is going to help keep your child's tank full. It's going to be what encourages your child to learn new things and to trust in the directions that you give. And most importantly, do your best to enjoy the journey of being a parent. I assure you that someday they will listen. They're never going to listen to you all of the time, but if you follow the guidelines in this presentation, you will find your children will be listening to you and following through on your directions much more frequently. That's all I have for you today, so I'm going to turn it back to Lisa, our operator, and she has a few questions that she would like to ask you.
Yes, to help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in the survey. After the last question, there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions. Your individual responses will be kept confidential. Please tell us the degree to which you agree or disagree with the following statements. And now let's get started with our survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by pressing the star key followed by the number 1 that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your Cigna to reach our equipment. For our first survey question, this session provided me with education on improving compliance. Press the star key, and the number 1 if you strongly agree. Press star, the number 2 if you agree. Press star, the number 3 if you disagree. Press star, and the number 4 if you strongly disagree. And please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to respond. And for our second survey question, this session educated me on specific strategies to help my child listen. Press star and the number 1 if you strongly agree. Press star and the number 2 if you agree. Press star and the number 3 if you disagree. Press star and the number 4 if you strongly disagree. And please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to respond. And for our third question, overall, this session met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Press star and the number 1 if you strongly agree. Press star and the number 2 if you agree. Press star and the number 3 if you disagree. Press star and the number 4 if you strongly disagree. And again, please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to respond. And for our fourth survey question, I would recommend this program to others. Press star and the number 1 if you agree, or press star and the number 2 if you do not agree. And again, please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to respond. And for our last survey question, please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Press star and the number 1 if your answer is, I am the parent of a child with autism. Press star and the number 2 if your answer is, I am a family member of a child with autism. Press star and the number 3 if your answer is other. And again, please stand by while we allow everyone a chance to respond. And we thank you for your feedback today and for participating in our program. If you would like to make any additional comments to help us improve the program or have any other questions on today's topic, please press star 1 to have your line opened into the conference. And again, if you're using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. A voice prompt on your phone line will indicate when your line is open. Please state your name before posing your question. Again, press star 1 to ask a question or if you have a comment. And we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for a question. And again, star one if you wish to ask a question or have a comment. And I have no questions in our queue at this time. I'll turn it back now to, oh, one moment, I do have a question. Caller, please state your name and ask your question.
My name is Eve Richard. I am the social worker that I've worked with kids with autism. My question is, I know a lot of the information that was provided is very helpful. However, my question is, what specifically do you advise that you do, what techniques, I guess, would you recommend that you use in terms of a kid that is on the spectrum of autism, highly functioning, however, have a lot of sensory issues that reduce their ability to process information and compliance as well?
That's a great question. One of the things that I find to be really effective for kids that especially have a hard time processing auditory information is to write things down for them, to make simple lists. For example, if you have a child who's, you want to introduce maybe like taking out the trash or something as a chore, and that's something that you'd like for them to comply with, writing down that who, what, when, where, why, how, what comes next, so they have it to look at ahead of time, before you actually expect them to take out the trash. Let's say trash day is on
Ms. McCullough, we're having difficulty hearing you. And please stand by. And we have lost our speaker, Ms. McCullough, and we're trying to reconnect her. Just one moment, please. Is now rejoined.
I am so sorry. I don't know why I keep getting dropped. Okay, to finish that, was a great question. So to finish with my thought, having the expectation written down before you actually expect the behavior to occur. So if you want the child, for example, I say if he's taking out the trash, like what does that look like? So step one, I want you to grab all of the bags from the bathroom and from the kitchen, tie them up, take them to the curb. I mean, just being really, really explicit in your direction and having it written out. If the child is able to understand written text is a great way to help facilitate their follow-through and understanding. I had a family that I was meeting with yesterday that their kiddo is having some issues with just like hygiene in the morning, and she keeps telling them like verbally what it is that she wants to do. And so what I've done with families in the past and recommended to them is just putting a post-it note on the mirror in the bathroom. So brush your teeth, put on your deodorant, and wash your face with Cetaphil. Just the child's not compliant because they have a hard time retaining all of that information. So using those kinds of strategies are really, really helpful.
Thank you for answering that question.
Thanks. I hope that helped.
Yes, thank you for answering the question.
And once again, that is star one if you have a question or a comment. And again, we'll pause. And for our next question, caller, please state your name and ask your question.
My name is Cindy. I'm the parent of an 8-year-old daughter who is on the spectrum, and she is nonverbal. And I guess my question is, how do you discern the child's understanding of what you've asked them to do?
That is a great question, and so much of that just comes from your experience with your child. I know when I'm doing compliance training with our little ones first, we start out very, very simply, and we've done a whole battery of assessments, so I have a pretty good understanding of the child's, verbal skills, what their receptive skills are. So clinically, we tend to have a pretty good idea of what we're working with before we start a program. I would say if you have a really strong reinforcer, so I have a little boy that we're working with right now, and when we first started, I know that he knows how to sit in a chair, so we just started his ABA program. I saw him at school. I know that he knows how to sit in a chair. So I saw him sit in a chair and follow his teacher's demand to sit in a chair in his SDC placement. However, starting a new program, when our therapist would tell him to sit in a chair, he's like, who are you? I don't need to listen to you. So I know if a child can do something, if they have a really good reinforcer, and they follow through with that, and then they follow through. So for this particular child, he is, like, obsessed with bubbles and loves bubbles, and that's what makes him happy. We use a first bend card with him that says sit in the chair, and it has an icon of bubbles after it. He's able to do that. So with that motivation in place, he's able to follow through. For a child that's nonverbal or has really severe language deficits, using as much picture support as you can is going to really help your success. Using social stories, watching videos of the expected behaviors to help teach those skills is going to be really helpful. Model Me Kids has a great video series that I use a lot with our younger children that have greater needs to help them understand expectations in different settings and situations. There's great apps that you can get on your iPad or your phone to make personalized social stories of what your expectations are to teach a new skill. If you have a good reinforcer or reward, most kids will want to be compliant. However, the difficulty with our kids with greater needs is teaching them how to be compliant. They're kind of two different things, if that makes sense.
Okay, thank you. That helps. And is it okay to help your child achieve the task? I mean, if you're realizing that this is something that you want them to learn how to do?
Yeah, absolutely. And so when I was talking about, like, the nitpicking section, it's just trying to teach, like, one or two new skills at a time rather than constantly bombarding them with, you know, sit up straight, wipe your mouth, don't hold your fork like that, do this, do that. So pick one or two things at a time that you want to focus on and then taking the time to teach the skill. And no child can be compliant if they don't know how to do something. So lots of times we have to teach the skill to mastery before we can expect there to be any compliance.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And once again, that is star one if you wish to ask a question. And again, we'll pause. For our next question, caller, please state your name and ask your question.
This is Eve Richard again. My other question is, I know you talk about consistency. How do you increase compliance as well as continue compliance, because what I am noticing is that parents may have a great handle on compliance at home. However, when the child gets to the school, the compliance may not be there.
Oh, this is a story of everybody's life. There's a term for that called behavioral contrast. Really, I mean, I worked in the school setting for a number of years, and when I worked in the school setting, I had the pleasure of collaborating with the in-home behavioral programs, and lots of times I felt like we were talking about completely different children. Could really, for the most of the time, really hold it together so well at school, and there was not crying, there was no tantrums, they did fabulously, and I would sometimes be puzzled as to why these kids had, you know, 20-hour a week programs or whatever when I didn't see those behaviors at school. Oftentimes they could hold it together and then at school and then go home and completely fall apart. I think having really good collaboration between the school team and the home team is absolutely essential. So I know even for my own son, because I have a child that has some unique needs, we have a homeschool communication log and behavior plan. So he is assessed every, I'm going to say, 2 hours right now for how he does with his compliance within the classroom. And he self-assesses himself, and the teacher assesses him as well, and they come to a little agreement on if he should get a happy face or a not happy face or a neutral face or whatever. And then we have a reinforcement system set up at home to help support his behavior in the classroom. Anything that you can do to bridge that communication between home and school and have some consistent reinforcement is going to be helpful. Oftentimes, school staff cannot reinforce behaviors like you can at home. I mean, teachers, I taught in a classroom, I made, you know, hardly any money, and I got all of my reinforcers from, you know, the dollar store. So not the most reinforcing stuff in the world. So really having the parents on board and being like, hey, we really want to target, you know, Emily not shouting out during class. So I'm going to, you know, take some data on her behavior, and I'm going to verbally praise her at school. But if you could partner with me, and maybe we can have a plan of action of maybe she earns a trip going to the movies or doing something that's really going to excite her that I cannot personally provide as a teacher. I was able to have a lot more success in the classroom when parents were able to collaborate with me like that.
Okay, and let's go on to our next question. Caller, do you have any further questions?
Yes, the last one that I would I'd like to ask is, how do you, for a child that is under the spectrum, again, highly functioning, that has some sensory need that, and I know you address arguing, how do you address the need for a child to complete their thoughts or sentence or conveying the information? And the example that I have is I work with kids with autism, but I also have a child on the spectrum. But the argument usually comes from the fact that he has a thought that he wants to finish, and it doesn't matter whether I'm ready to move on or not. He's going to finish saying what he has to say. So how do you, and that's not only him, but I've worked with other kids. How do you see the, how do you, I guess, clarify or figure out which one is just arguing for the sake of arguing and the one that they have to finish their thinking or they have something to put out there, and as soon as they get a chance to do that, then they'll be fine? How do you differentiate, I guess, between that type of arguing just for the sake of avoiding and the one that is speaking for the sake of having something to say?
I like using the technique of having the kids who can write, allowing them to write down their thought on a post-it note and have a place to keep those thoughts, or they can put it in their pocket and save it for later to share. There can be a place in the home where they are able to write it down, like their whatever it is, that perseverative thought that they have to get out, and to share it in that way. it's really, because I've had this with lots and lots of kids, that their anxiety really increases when they're not able to get that out. So giving them some more appropriate ways to get it out is really helpful. If this is a huge issue with them and it's not realistic to say, okay, just one time and one time only, because it's going to cause such huge behaviors, trying to figure out what their baseline is for how often that they're bringing up that, that point and starting to slowly limit it. So, okay, you can tell me 3 times. Okay, you can tell me 2 times. You can tell me 1 time. And starting to just kind of soften it that way is very helpful as well. However, I just really love having them write it down. It really helps them just kind of get it out of their mind and share it that way as well.
Thank you for answering the question.
And we do not appear to have any further questions. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference back to Kristen Martin. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much for attending, and thank you, Cindy, for providing such wonderful insights. Again, if you have questions about therapies discussed today, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Please be sure to mark your calendars to join our next Autism Awareness Seminar on April 10th at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, when we will be discussing challenging behaviors. Thank you, and have a great day.
And ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude today's conference call. We thank you for your participation.